Unmuted.
All right, good morning, everyone. It is 10:07 a.m. on Wednesday, September 9th, 2020. I call this regularly scheduled of the meeting of the Public Service Commission to order. I'm Commissioner Brian Krosius. Also with me are Commissioner Julie Fedorchek and Commissioner Randy Christman, so we do have a quorum. My opening comments would relate to a meeting that, and a visit, actually, that North Dakota had last week with U.S. Secretary, Energy Secretary Dan Brulette. Hopefully I pronounced that correctly. The meeting occurred up in Minot. It was orientated around North Dakota energy, as you might imagine, including some pipeline, oil and gas discussion that I wasn't a part of, but we were invited to take part in the coal side of the equation, the lignite side, and I thought it was a really good discussion. I was interviewed on the radio yesterday, and that came up, and how I described it to the host was that that is an incredibly big deal to have a U.S. Energy Secretary on the ground in North Dakota listening to our specific concerns, challenges, opportunities as well. So I thought it was a very good discussion. I think it underscored the recognition from the administration that coal is a very important part of the energy mix, both from a reliability, resiliency standpoint. So I just thought that was an excellent visit by the Energy Secretary. I was pleased to see that he was on the ground in North Dakota and working with, I think, the appropriate stakeholders as we navigate through a transition that's obviously become a very challenging time in some respects as well. So I appreciate his visit. Commissioner Fedorchek?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I also appreciated his visit and the senators getting him here to discuss things with our industry leaders. My frustration is that there's not a lot of time left to make the changes that need to be made to have an impact on the coal resources in our country. And I think that there's a number of significant changes that need to be made in the marketplace, pushed by FERC through the regional transmission organizations, and also technology-wise, just to advance the carbon capture and storage technology and secure investments to make that happen. And so I just think time is of essence, and we really there needs to be a full court press by everybody in our state and others that want to see coal remain as a resource on our grid, because the number of retirements is pretty startling. And once these facilities retire, I think they're going to be really hard to bring back online. So I really do think that now is the time we have to really increase the pressure.
Commissioner Christman.
Not one thing that either of you said that I would disagree with. I'll just add to it that although visits from cabinet or other high-ranking administration officials have been far more frequent the last few years than the first 4 years that I was on the commission, there were some before that too. And Mr. Brulette I thought, one of the most engaged. You know, there have been some times, especially years ago, when some administration officials showed up that I felt were putting in the time and or checking off a box and not really listening. I think that he senses and understands the urgency just as well. And I think that if not, the California situation has highlighted it in his mind, because we are seeing firsthand, day in and day out, the results of relying too heavily on intermittent power sources with always this fallback that in times of shortage, we'll just buy some off the market. When everybody relies on the same market for the backup and sits idly by while the market for the baseload disappears, we are all facing the same thing as in the future as California is facing now. He brought it up and talked about it in much better terms than I ever could, and so I appreciate that he seems to understand that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the one thing, and I think it was alluded to, it's a challenging time, and time is of the essence. And I think one of the takeaways, not only for the lignite industry, but for other types of energy production in North Dakota, is that we don't rally the troops, so to speak, and have these types of conversations when we're on the brink, but rather doing it in advance, because this arguably has been a slow motion challenge that has been occurring in North Dakota for well over the past decade and other parts of the country as well. And when we potentially get to the point of no return, then it's too late. And that's just the reality. So being more proactive on these types of issues, and I'm talking about the country as a whole, and I think it goes back to public education. The one comment I made during the visit was affordability for the end user. And that end user includes not only businesses and households with decent incomes, but it includes low-income households, and it's going to have a negative effect on them in terms of cost if we don't start to recognize that we need stable, low-cost, baseload power in the mix. But we could have an extended conversation on this, and I think you're hearing the same theme echoed across the commission as we talk about this particular issue. But I'm still optimistic that projects like initiatives like Project Tundra and will come to fruition, and plants, including Coal Creek, remain in operation. All right. Anything further from the other two commissioners? Okay, we have two items on consent in the previous minutes. I move approval.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. The motion is approved.
All right. First item on the agenda, I move the commission adopt the findings of fact, conclusions of law and order, and Public Service Commission, Vrindri Electric Cooperative Incorporated Damage Prevention Case, PU-18-374.
Second.
This originated with a complaint filed on October 30th, 2018, from Mr. Warren Colby of, and I hope I pronounce this correctly, Voltaire, if that is the proper pronunciation of that town in North Dakota. The complaint alleged Vrindri Electric Cooperative failed to mark its underground facility within 24 inches horizontally in violation of North Dakota Century Code Section 49-23-04, which is the one-call law. On November 1st of 2018, Commission Advocacy staff issued a letter informing Vrindri of the complaint and received a response from Summit Utility Services, which was the contractor that Vrindri used to have the lines marked. That response came in on November 14th. Vrindri also provided a response as well. On April 3rd, 2019, the commission received a supplemental response from Vrindri. And then on December 2nd of 2019, advocacy staff filed a formal complaint alleging that Vrindri violated North Dakota Century Code, the one-call law, by failing to mark its underground facilities, as mentioned, within 24 inches horizontally. On February 19th, 2020, the commission found the formal complaint stated a prima facie case and did serve that complaint. We issued a notice of opportunity for hearing on the complaint. That was in May, and we did hold the hearing this past July. And what we were considering was whether Verindry had violated North Dakota Century Code, whether a civil penalty should be assessed, and in what amount, and whether there is any other relief the commission finds just and proper on this case. So what happened was the lines were marked. They were not marked within 24 inches, however, as required by law. They were off just by a couple of inches. And as a result, Mr. Colby did strike an unjacketed line, a 15 kV electric supply cable, just outside of the 24-inch marking requirement. So he was, I believe, putting a fence post in. And I'm trying to remember back if he was actually doing that to construct a fence, or maybe it would have been to put up a sign. But it was a post hole that he was digging when he struck the cable, struck the line. He was, according to his testimony, he was electrocuted to some degree, and that he had worked with the doctor on that. And, you know, really the points in all of this, it's a very serious incident. There's no disputing that whatsoever. It could have resulted in potential death. Thankfully, Mr. Colby is still with us. But there's also no disputing the fact that Verindry did follow the process in a timely fashion and in compliance with the law, with the exception of the contractor that they are ultimately responsible for. The third-party contractor that went out and marked the lines for them, which was Summit Excavating, Verindry is responsible for the actions of that contractor. The lines were found by the commission to be mismarked, and as a result of the mismarking and the incident that occurred, Verindry shall be assessed a civil penalty of $7,500, remitting $5,000 of that with $2,500 of that suspended on the condition that no further violations are committed within 5 years of the date of the order. So a $7,500 fine with $2,500 suspended, $5,000 payable. And, you know, again, I don't want to minimize the incident in any way because you simply can't. It was a very serious situation, and the consequences could have been far worse. It does underscore the importance of the North Dakota One Call Law to keep the public safe. And it also, I hope, sends a signal to other utilities operating in the state that their contractors, the contractors that they employ, put into use, are ultimately their responsibility in terms of the work they do, whether it's on the excavation side, whether it's on the location side. Ultimately, they are responsible for the work of that contractor. So, again, Verindry has had a very good track record, and they have and continue to be a good operator in the state. They're a quality organization, and it's an unfortunate sequence of events that led to the incident as described. So they were very, I think, forthright and didn't dispute the fact that a violation had occurred. And we had a rigorous discussion because one of the things that I think is one of the challenges, at least I myself personally face when we go through these cases. There are occasions where an excavator may begin work without a ticket or might continue working after a ticket has expired. They last for 21 days and they may not hit anything and then it's not reported as a complaint. To me, it's far more egregious for a company to not obtain a one-call ticket and not to go through the proper process. And although nothing may happen, you don't know what's below when you're doing any type of excavation. So we don't want this to become, and I think I use the words, the luck of the draw, in the sense that someone didn't follow the law at all, they didn't get a ticket, and nothing happened. But again, I think that that's a more serious offense. We just don't hear about those. So it really boils down to, and it goes back to continuous education. We'll continue to work with North Dakota One Call on how we can improve processes and procedures. And they have already extended that, shown that willingness as well to work on how we can help prevent these types of things from happening in the future. And I think that includes continuing to work with locators and emphasizing that you have to do it correctly. Otherwise, bad things can certainly happen. Commissioner Fedorchak?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This case is definitely an example or an educational opportunity for the public, because the gentleman was very similar to what any one of us could be doing, work in our own yards or around our own, you know, ranches. And that is, he called, he had the facilities marked, and he went out to do his work, avoiding, he thought, the infrastructure. The way the infrastructure is marked, and this is where there's a gap in the education to the people using the one-call system, and the infrastructure is marked on the ground, and then those markings are intended to ensure that there's no, that infrastructure lays within 24 inches of the marking. But it isn't like within 1 inch of the marking. It isn't to assure that it's just directly under the marking. The point that the public needs to know is that there could be infrastructure any place within 24 inches of that mark. Now, this gentleman was digging just outside of that and hit the infrastructure, and that's why there's a penalty here, because the infrastructure wasn't within 24 inches of the marking. But even that said, I do not think that the public fully understands that that's how the law is, that that infrastructure could be within anywhere within 24 inches of that mark. So you have to be extremely careful when you're digging. You can't just go 6 inches away from the mark and dig to your heart's content. You have to be very careful and prudent when you're digging that close to the markings. So I think that, you know, to the extent that we can use this case to get that story out there, I think that would be very helpful, and we'll be working with the One Call to try to improve the education that exists to people when they get notified that their infrastructure has been marked, that they fully understand that, that what those markings mean, and can then employ the proper protocols when they start to dig. The gentleman in this case, I don't think he was aware. He wasn't told by One Call that there could have been infrastructure within 24 inches, and I don't think he was aware of that. He expressed that he wasn't, and you know, he hit this underground infrastructure with his post hole digger, and then he thought it was a root and went back down again to try to, and that's where the, you know, serious danger exists, is he was not aware that he had hit the line at first time he struck it. So that's what we need to do a better job of, educating the public so that they're more careful in these instances. And we're very, very fortunate that he wasn't more seriously injured. And because of the severity of that potential accident, that's why you see a, you know, not insignificant fine in this case.
Commissioner Christman?
And the other lesson for people that do some of this kind of work is, in this case, you know, from personal experience, there are times when you're digging a hole and maybe you hit a rock, or it could be a root or something, and you take like a crowbar or something down to dislodge it. And of course, if you were to hit an electric line, you would expect that that electricity would come up through a steel instrument like that, or one of those hand augers would be the other one we'd expect. In this case, he was digging with a post hole digger with fiberglass handles. Now, I don't know if the electricity was somehow able to traverse the fiberglass or if it came through the soil, but fiberglass or wood handled devices are not enough to protect you either. And so that's another lesson that I think people could take away from this. The other thing I also just wanted to say about Virindri Electric, they have been excellent in their work on safety issues. They've been a leader in the whole one-call thing since in the 90s when we created the law. But just like a very good driver still ends up with a penalty if they break the law and get caught, especially if their violation would cause an accident or some kind of damages. In this case, even a very good player in the area of utility safety, they're responsible for their contractor, and in this case, there's a problem. And so, as Commissioner Fedorchak mentioned, it's a significant penalty. We chose to go not quite as high as advocacy staff recommended. But I think this is a fair penalty for a case where someone did experience pretty significant personal damage from hitting that line. And the line was more than 24 inches from where the mark showed.
You know, one final comment, and it relates to Mr. Colby and his presence at the hearing. When you look at what's happening across the country or in other different parts of the country and how people react to certain things. Mr. Colby was here, and despite the fact that he hit the line, his primary and really only concern was about educating the public so it didn't happen to someone else. That was his motive. That was his desire. And it would have been so easy for someone in that position to take a different route. And when I look at, again, other parts of the country why I absolutely love living in this state and the people that are here, it's because of the Mr. Colbys of the world and how he approached this. So with all of the bad we hear all across the country, and this was obviously a serious incident, to see that type of North Dakota attitude on display, I thought was refreshing, and frankly, it's not surprising. This is just a great place to live. It really is. So that is it for my agenda items, Commissioner Fedorchak.
All righty. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Should we not take a vote on that?
Oh, yeah, we have to vote.
You know, that would probably be more effective. Otherwise, we're going to have to do it later. So, yes, please.
We have a motion and a second. Sensing no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. The motion is approved.
All right. Now, yeah.
Now we can.
Yeah, and Dave,
maybe,
please.
Maybe we should require a gavel wrap after each agenda item to make sure we know when we're,
we're done.
So if someone wants to just kind of delete that little part, that would be great. Commissioner Fedorchak.
All right, I just have one motion. I move the commission adopt the order in FPL Energy, Burley County Wind, Wilton Wind 1, transfer certificate number 88. Permit number 98, signing application case number PU-20-301.
Second.
Thank you, Randy. This is a transfer of a certificate and route permit for a certificate and permit for FPL Energy Burley County Wind to Wilton Wind Energy 1. And we have sent out a notice of opportunity for hearing on this. There has been no requests for hearing. Staff has gone through the requirements. The company has, the transfer company has certified that they can comply with all the rules and conditions of the existing permit and are financially able to do so. And so this is transfers is ready to go.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. The motion is approved.
That's it for me. Thank you.
Okay. Commissioner Christman.
I also only have one agenda item. I move the commission approve the decommissioning plan and cost estimate along with the self-guarantee filed on August 19th, 2020. Ottertail Power Company, Maricourt Wind Power Project, Dickey and McIntosh, decommissioning plan and cost, case number PU-19-366.
Second.
So Ottertail filed their decommissioning plan cost estimate and the self-guarantee, as I said, for the Maricourt Wind Facility. And that facility is anticipated to be operational on about October 30th of 2020. Maricourt consists of 75 2-megawatt wind turbines for a total nameplate capacity of 150 megawatts. The total cost to decommission the facility is approximately $19.48 million. That includes roads and everything, so it's not just a turbine issue, but if you divide it by the 75 turbines, it would come out to just short of $260,000 per turbine. Ottertail proposes a self-guarantee for the same amount of the decommissioning estimate to fulfill their financial assurance requirement. Ottertail can file such a guarantee, not because, as we often talk about with coal issues, that a self-guarantor has to have an A bond rating with one of the major national bond rating firms, because I guess now I'm going off the cuff. I don't think Ottertail has a bond rating. But they're able to do a self-guarantee under our rules because they're an electric public utility as defined by North Dakota Century Code, and it's the section of law that gives us jurisdiction to work with them. And so the total amount of the guarantee, though, would be not able to exceed 25% of their tangible net worth. And even with this and their previous self-guarantees, they're well under that 25% area. So staff recommends approval of the decommissioning plan, cost estimate, and self-guarantee, as do I.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. The motion is approved.
All right. That completes our regular agenda in terms of the items. Just a few announcements. On Thursday, tomorrow, on September 10th at 8:30 a.m., we will be having a legislative discussion here, both in the commission room and also via video. For some of the participants, the public is more than welcome to listen into that discussion. We have a dial-in number posted on our website, and that would apply to any of the meetings that the commission does have. And that was actually another interesting question I had yesterday, and it was about accessibility to the commission's proceedings. And we've talked about this, the fact that while there have been a number of negative things related to the pandemic, there also from a transparency accessibility standpoint, we've had farmers call in from the cab of their tractor. We did on one hearing, and that individual may not have been able to provide testimony and comments had that not this not been in place. So I think it's a really good thing from a transparency standpoint. The meetings have always been completely open to the public regardless, but I think this is a good extension of that. And then our next commission meeting is on Wednesday, September 23rd at 10 a.m., followed by a work session at 1:30 p.m. that day, again on the 23rd, and that is for deferred accounting, electric and gas. That's for MDU, NSP, and Otter Tail. And we just continue to look and have a conversation about COVID-related costs and how they might be handled, but also at the same time, COVID-related efficiencies that have been gained throughout this all as well. So that concludes the announcements. We will now take a brief recess or go to take questions from the press and then reconvene for the administrative portion of the meeting. We are now in recess.